The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Now let's transition to Florida because even though it is expected to weaken on approach, it is so incredibly strong right now that you're going to find it very difficult for it to be nothing less than a major hurricane when it makes landfall in Florida.
And we are talking about right now the possibility of a direct hit with 10 to 12 foot tidal surge. Put that in perspective, Hurricane Helene, which just left the Tampa Bay area a week ago, there was 6 foot storm surge, and that was literally devastating to so many in our coastal area. We have 126 miles of coast just in the city of Tampa. And so people need to be heeding that warning.
What would you say to people who aren't heeding those evacuation orders?
Well, I can tell you right now that they may have done that in others. There's never been one like this. And this Helene was a wake-up call. This is literally catastrophic. And I can say without any dramatization whatsoever, if you choose to stay in one of those evacuation areas, you're going to die.
And on this issue of funding, the administration has money to send to Lebanon without Congress coming back. But Congress does have to come back to approve money to send to people in North Carolina. Do I have that right?
Here's what I'm going to be very clear about. The president and the vice president has had a robust whole of government response to this. We've taken this very seriously. More than $200 million that we have provided to the impacted areas. But instead, people want to do disinformation, misinformation, which is dangerous. Which is dangerous. Because then when folks on the ground hear that, they may not want to ask for the help that they need. That is there for them. That is there for them. That's our focus here.
President Biden is fond of saying, show me your budget and I will tell you what you value. If he's got money for people in Lebanon right now, without Congress having to come back, what does it say about his values? There's not enough money right now for
his
people
values,
in North Carolina who need it. That's not misinformation.
Wait, no, that is, your whole premise of the question is misinformation, sir.
There's a lot of disinformation being pushed out there by the former president about what is available, in particular, to the survivors of Helene. And first of all, it's extraordinarily irresponsible. It's about him, it's not about you.
And we've been laser focused on leveraging all resources available, including from the federal government. And I've been in touch with both FEMA and the president, as well as marshaling all our state agencies and working to support our local communities. And so for Kamala Harris, to try to say that my sole focus on the people of Florida is somehow selfish is delusional. She has no role in this. In fact, she's been vice president for 3.5 years. I've dealt with a number of storms under this administration. She has never contributed anything to any of these efforts. And so what I think is selfish
is her
before? Trying to blunder into this. No. And here's
has
the
she
thing.
Ever called before?
She has no role. No, she has no role in this process. She's the first one who's trying to politicize the storm, and she's doing that just because of her campaign.
We're being overtaken by curses, and it's not just these so-called natural disasters. We're also witnessing the curse of failed and corrupt leadership on display every day. I mean, the ones crying out disinformation, they're leading the charge, spreading disinformation. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. Daily. A few of the Rumble viewers, by the way, have been complaining about the ads that we're not putting up, but that I guess Rumble is putting up. So not sure if we can do anything about that, but wherever you want, if you're tired of ads and you want to go to thetrumpet.com, you can certainly watch the program there ad-free every day as well. Your choice, but if you go to Rumble, make sure you give us the thumbs up and leave a nice comment. You can email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. So it was just a few days ago that Secretary Mayorkas told us that FEMA was out of money. And so then commentators to come along and say, out of money? Well, how are you sending all this money to Lebanon? Or how do you have so much money for the pier in Gaza? Or for Ukraine? And on it goes. Congress doesn't have to be in session for them to find money for Lebanon. Now the propagandists say, no, FEMA's doing great. Well, that's not the way Mayorkas put it 2 seconds ago, clip 15.
We are meeting the immediate needs with the money that we have. We are expecting another hurricane hitting. We do not have the funds. FEMA does not have the funds to make it through the season.
FEMA does not have the funds to make it through the season. A moment in time where he said the quiet part out loud. That, by the way, that might be the first time any government official has ever made a statement to the effect that the government's out of money. They spend money. They've been spending money they don't have for decades and decades. When have they rolled back any government program? But here, Helene, it just completely devastates Georgia, North Carolina, Eastern Tennessee. All of these red states, these swing states. Look at the wishful thinking. This is from, what is this, Politico? Helene hit Trump strongholds in Georgia and North Carolina. It could swing the election. Listen to the first line. Hurricane Helene hit especially hard in heavily Republican areas of Georgia and North Carolina, a fact that could work to Donald Trump's disadvantage in the two swing states. Again, every so often they say the quiet part out loud. I hope those people aren't going to be able to vote. I hope they won't create any kind of smooth and easy way for maybe a drop box to be installed somewhere up in the mountains of North Carolina. They're not going to be rushing to put up drop boxes all in all of these red districts or precincts, you can be sure. They did that well with the help of Zuckerberg in Atlanta and Philadelphia and Milwaukee. You know how they pulled it off in 2020. But yeah, there's actually a headline. I think that's Politico. A headline where they're saying, hopefully this hurts Trump. It could be to his disadvantage. Is it disinformation to say that there's all these stories coming out of North Carolina where citizens are having to take, they're having to take matters into their own hands? And there's even footage coming out now. You can roll some of the tape. These FEMA helicopters that are harassing just locals trying to help their good Samaritans, trying to help their neighbors. These FEMA choppers coming in for a low flyby. And you, people are filming it. People are saying, what are they doing? Are stuff blown away? Are they trying to help us? Or did they do that on purpose? To just come in real low and then take off? What's going on? And where are all the reporters in the hills of North Carolina? Instead, we have all of the talking heads telling us what's disinformation. The KJP actually said that Peter Doocy's question was disinformation. For you to even ask the question, how come you're sending all this money to Lebanon without the need of congressional approval, but then you're saying, well, now for more hurricane relief, we've got to get Congress back, and they've got to do their part. They've got to act. These people will find money anywhere for anything as long as it's one of their pet projects. But then people are crying out for help. There's bodies by the hundreds still missing. And we've got another hurricane set to hit western Florida tomorrow evening. Besieged by curses, overtaken by curses. And then you've got corrupt leadership at the top. You think they're ready for another disaster? Well, DeSantis will do his part. But here are the Kamala people. Yeah, we tried to call DeSantis and he won't return our call. You've never called about any disaster. About it. He just put it right back on her. It's delusional to politicize even this. They're swinging for the fences with everything because they're so far behind. That's why. Now you've got, and it's interesting too to see how the media has once again pivoted on a dime so quick. Now, did you know? Now it's Donald Trump who never does interviews and Kamala and Tim Walz, they're out there everywhere. Well, they are making a lot more appearances to their friends in the media. Howard Stern, The View, boy, that's going to be a hard-hitting exchange. I think she goes on The View today. Here's Jesse Waters commenting on the new media blitz coming from this desperate campaign. Clip 9.
Kamala is doing Colbert tomorrow, a guy who held a fundraiser for the Biden-Harris campaign. Then she's doing The View, another love fest, and then Howard Stern. The last Democrat nominee who went on Stern dropped out. These are all safe spaces that make her look like she's getting out there, but she's just hiding in plain sight. We're in two proxy wars. The border's wide open. Prices and crime are high. And she's doing frivolous sit-downs with friends. NBC says most of these sit-downs are just for the vibes. But the vibes are scary.
They're scary. It was scary seeing the clips come out from that 60 Minutes interview last night. I mean, they have no positions. They have no response. And in the case of CBS, I mean, it turns out it wasn't exactly as friendly as I'm sure The View ladies will be, or Colbert. We put together this montage. These aren't all from the CBS interview, but this is Kamala and Walz just in the last 24, 36 hours. Clip 11.
States like Georgia force women to cross the border, and then we have a death of Amber Thurman. So let's be very clear. Trying to cut hairs on an issue on this is not where the American public's at.
Okay. We're elected, but to be clear, the Minnesota law right is far beyond Roe v. Wade. And about the Amber Thurman case in Georgia, her family has, and it's tragic, she is a young mother who left behind a young son. But what her family has said is it was a complication from an abortion pill that she received, and she didn't get proper care when she went to a Georgia hospital, which had multiple opportunities to intervene there. Her own attorney, the family's attorney, says it wasn't the Georgia law, it was the hospitals. What he claims is malpractice, not treating her when she clearly showed up in distress and still had the byproducts of her pregnancy because of that rare complication from the abortion pill. So just to be clear on the Georgia law and how her family and her attorney sees it.
My plan is about saying that when you invest in small businesses, you invest in the middle class, and you strengthen America's economy. Small businesses are part of the backbone of America's economy.
But pardon me, Madam Vice President. The question was, how are you going to pay for it?
Well, one of the things is I'm going to make sure that the richest among us who can afford it pay their fair share in taxes.
But we're dealing with the real world here.
But the real world includes...
How are you going to get this through Congress?
You know, when you talk quietly with a lot of folks in Congress, they know exactly what I'm talking about because their constituents know exactly what I'm talking about.
The reason so many voters don't know you is that you have changed your position on so many things.
In the last 4 years, I have been Vice President of the United States, and I have been traveling our country, and I have been listening to folks and seeking what is possible in terms of common ground.
What is it that is, to coin a phrase, great about America and that kindles your love for it?
There's so much. There's so much.
In your debate with J.D. Vance, you said, "I'm a knucklehead at times." And I think you were referring to the time that you said that you were in Hong Kong during the Tiananmen Square unrest when you were not.
Yeah.
Is that kind of misrepresentation, isn't that more than just being a knucklehead?
I think folks know who I am, and I think they know the difference between someone expressing emotion, telling a story, getting a date wrong, rather than a pathological liar like Donald Trump.
But I think it comes down to the question of whether you can be trusted to tell the truth.
Yeah, well, I can. I think I can.
What the American people do want is that we have leaders who can build consensus, where we can figure out compromise and understand it's not a bad thing, as long as you don't compromise your values, to find common sense solutions. And that has been my approach.
I am proud to have earned the support of the vast majority of delegates and to have been elected the Democratic nominee. I am proud to have received the endorsement of leaders around this country from every background and walk of life to fight in this election over the next month for our democracy.
But I think this truncated process is why people think or say they don't really know who you are.
Look, I've been in this race for 70 days.
That's 60 minutes saying, I think people don't really know who you are. In the case of Walls, he pointed out two lies. I think you're worse than a knucklehead. That's 60 minutes. And then she's flip-flopping, and the guy, to his credit, not even sure the name of that reporter, but to his credit, he's exposing her flip-flops. And she just holds her finger to the wind. She's changed her tune now on the southern border, the border czar. Now she's all for border security. It's just words, meaningless words. You can see why they've avoided the media, even the regime media. Because look at how easily they're exposed for their lies. And then as soon as they don't get the question they like, well, you're spreading disinformation by just asking that. They want, just like Hillary said, another quiet part out loud, they want total control. They want to totally control the conversation. Trump just said, I don't want to go on 60 Minutes again. They lie. I don't have to do another debate. I'm out there. People can hear. They know my positions right and left. He's more accessible than just about anybody in history, in political history. And yet, listen to the spin. Listen to the spin on the meltdown this morning, clip 7.
What? I've heard from people inside his campaign, I know you have too, though they're very careful, a real frustration that they have no idea what this guy is going to do. He doesn't do the things he should do to win, and they can't control him at all. What are you hearing? Is there an understanding on his part that he is no longer up to sitting for serious interviews where people challenge him? Is his age, as Peter Baker wrote in the New York Times yesterday, really preventing him from doing serious interviews? The debate, not doing the debate? I'm dumbfounded because this is just not the behavior of somebody who wants to win an election.
Yeah, Donald Trump doesn't want to win, and he's no longer doing long-form interviews. He's afraid, I guess. He's just done two debates in the last few months. Two debates where it was 1-on-3, where he was going head-to-head with CBS. I forget who hosted the other one. Two debates. He calls in show after show. Good for him in being somewhat selective as we come near to the finish line. He says to CBS, no. Remember Leslie Stahl in 2020? Remember how she lied to cover up for the Biden crimes? Remember how she denied that I was spied upon? I think I'll go somewhere else. And their heads just explode because, well, I mean, it's tradition. Every political candidate running for president goes on 60 Minutes in October before the election. Well, not this time. Here's more from the meltdown, clip 8.
Trump just says whatever he wants. He only sits for friendly interviews. They ask him. I was talking to a Republican over the weekend saying if he would just talk about the economy every day. And even though the metrics are still good, but a lot of Americans don't feel it. They're like, if he would just talk about the economy every day, we'd win. But he can't, Willie. He can't and he won't. He wants to relitigate past grievances with Leslie Stahl. He wants to say racist things about migrants. He wants to just fight, and they can't keep him on message. And right now, there's a refusal for him to be challenged whatsoever, both in interviews, and I'm told, and I think Joe's heard this as well, even by his aides. He simply won't listen to them anymore. He does only what he wants to do.
He's challenged more than any man who's ever run for president. You saw how it was during his first term, Jim Acosta and all those people. He took questions from everybody. And a lot of times they weren't even questions. They were just lectures from Acosta and from others in the press corps. Shouting him down, in fact. They say that he only does friendly interviews. And they say it right at the time that Kamala's going on with Stern, The View, CBS, who else? Oh, Colbert, the funny man who's had the campaign fundraiser for Democrats. They're all Democrat operatives. And so is CBS. Listen to, I think this is Scott Pelley. This was what they said last night, and I love the very serious and smug overtones as he explains why Trump is not on 60 Minutes this time around. Listen to clip 4.
It's been a tradition for more than half a century that the major party candidates for president sit down with 60 Minutes in October. In 1968, it was Richard Nixon and Hubert Humphrey. This year, Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump accepted our invitation. But unfortunately, last week, Trump canceled. The campaign offered shifting explanations. First, it complained that we would fact-check the interview. We fact-check every story. Later, Trump said he needed an apology for his interview in 2020. Trump claims correspondent Leslie Stahl said in that interview that Hunter Biden's controversial laptop came from Russia. She never said that. Trump has said his opponent doesn't do interviews because she can't handle them. He had previously declined another debate with Harris, so tonight may have been the largest audience for the candidates between now and Election Day.
Leave it to Trump to break from tradition and leave it to the regime to go ballistic. You've got to do what we tell you to do. Look at how many lies he said, and he says it so effortlessly. Leslie never said that word for word. She didn't say that. If you go back and listen to that exchange, Trump called her out for saying you've covered up the laptop story and you're doing it to give cover to the Bidens. And she said, we're not covering the laptop story because it can't be verified that it's Hunter's, in other words. So she didn't say point blank it came from Russia. That's what he wants for you to believe there, that's what it centered around. Trump said, you're covering up crimes and it's all there on the laptop. It can't be verified. It can't be verified. They lie. They lie. And Donald Trump, he sat through some whoppers back in 2020. The tape exists, by the way. We fact check every story. Listen to clip 5 from 2020.
Incredible the way you can try and say this and sit there and look me in the eye and say it. He accepted money, his family from Russia, from Ukraine, from China, and from other places. His brother, who didn't have experience, became a big builder in Iraq without experience. Take a look at what's going on, Leslie. And then you say that shouldn't be discussed.
I'm saying
it's the biggest scandal out there, Leslie.
And you think it's the biggest issue to campaign on?
I think it's this. I think it's one of the biggest scandals I've ever seen, and you don't cover it.
Biggest.
You want to talk about?
Well, because it can't be verified.
You want to talk about insignificant things?
I'm telling you.
Of course, it can be verified. Excuse me. They found the laptop, Leslie.
Can't be verified.
What can't be verified?
The laptop.
Why do you say that?
The laptop can't be verified. Notice she didn't say, you know, we haven't gotten it verified yet. We're working on it. She said it can't be verified. And then what were the 51 intel agents saying at the same time? That it was all the classic earmarks hallmarks of Russian disinformation. They lie. Brazenly. I mean, just to your face. She should come back and apologize. That's the unedited version, by the way. That when that surfaced, I think CBS probably didn't want to be too selective in their editing of that piece, that segment. It can't be verified. Well, Scott Pelley said last night that they fact check everything. You couldn't fact check the laptop? Why did it take 18 months? Before the New York Times finally came around and admitted, yeah, it is Hunter's. It is Hunter's laptop. You couldn't have figured that out. You could have figured that out in 18 seconds. They didn't want it to be true because they wanted to cover for the Bidens. And then they were quite happy to amplify the really serious document coming from 51 intel agents. I mean, deep state actors. And they all said it's Russian disinformation. How much do you suppose CBS amplified that fake news? They fact check every story? No, they don't. And they don't even apologize when they lie, when they get it wrong. There's no apology. So good for Trump to break from tradition. It's a pretty lame tradition. If you have to go on CBS, he doesn't have to. Nobody does. Well, Kamala did. I don't think it went quite as well as she was hoping for her and Walz. Listen to this one from 2020. This is clip 6.
Let me tell you, it's the biggest, second biggest scandal. So, the biggest scandal was when they spied on my campaign. They spied on my campaign.
There's Leslie. No real evidence of that.
Of course there is. No. It's all over the place. Leslie,
sir,
they spied on my campaign and they got caught.
Can I say something? You know, this is 60 Minutes. And we can't put on things we can't verify.
You won't put it on because it's bad for Biden.
We can't things we can't verify.
Leslie, they spied on my campaign.
Well, we can't verify.
It's been totally verified.
No.
It's been, just go down and get the papers. They spied on my campaign, they got caught.
No.
And then they went much further than that, and they got caught. And you will see that, Leslie. And you know that, but you just don't want to put it on the air.
As a matter of fact, I don't know that.
Okay.
No, she says. No, they didn't spy on you. Can't be verified. Here again, they hide behind it can't be verified. We're just telling the truth. We're 60 Minutes. We're not going to run a story that can't be verified. They do it all the time. Her position in 2020 was that they didn't spy on Trump. They went into a FISA court 4 times, lied to a judge, in order to spy on the Trump campaign. It's in the newspapers now, as Trump said there. She couldn't admit it. She couldn't bring herself to admit that they spied on Trump or that the laptop actually belongs to Hunter. That's what we're dealing with here. That's what he's going up against. And that's why he won't go on CBS again, or at least 60 Minutes. Why bother? He'll confront. You have to admire him for that. But who else? Who else in the swamp? Name anyone else in D.C. that would demand CBS, 60 Minutes, apologize. Nobody does this. Scott Pelley can, I mean, he can come out with the opening statement that sounds so serious, and I'm a serious journalist, and we fact check everything, and Trump's campaign, he kind of waffled around these reasons why he couldn't sit down with us. Roll the tape from 2020. See for yourself. It was a joke. Brazen lies. These people are so good at it. As I say, we're being besieged by curses, and this is one of them. This is not a free press. They're not out there holding up the truth and defending the truth. In so many ways, they cover up truth and they spread lies. They are the spreaders of disinformation. And you see just how delusional and deranged they are in their reasonings when you can't even ask KJP a question. How dare you to even suggest that FEMA's avoiding these areas or getting in the way of hurricane relief? How dare you? That's misinformation and that's dangerous. They covered up the Hunter laptop, and even if you leave aside the cheating, you had polls after the fact in 2020, after the presidential election, where they said, had we gotten the truth about Hunter and the Biden crime family, it would have changed our vote. What was it, like 15%? I mean, that swings the election in the favor of Trump right there, just that alone. So here, leave aside the mules, leave aside the glitches, leave aside the late night ballot drops. Just the media alone covering up the Hunter Biden laptop, censoring coverage of the Hunter Biden laptop, which shows they were pulling in money from Ukraine, from Georgia, from China, from Russia, and all kinds of other countries too. I mean, this was a lucrative source of income for the Bidens. He's a career politician. It's the pay-to-play scheme that's raked in tens of millions of dollars for the Bidens. And not just Joe and his wife Jill, Hunter, all the relatives, the cousins, the nephews, the brother. What a scandal. I mean, you have Trump there sitting with Leslie Stahl saying, this is even a bigger scandal. They spied on my campaign. No, they didn't. She said twice. And then can't be verified. I'll just hide behind can't be verified. Has it been verified yet? It was verified already. As he said, read the papers. Listen to clip 10. This is from Sky News Australia.
And that sentiment about the Biden-Harris administration failing Americans seems to be spreading if the latest Polymarket data is any guide. Kamala Harris has gone from leading to now Trump is leading, and that lead is extending, particularly in recent days. We see a lot of polls, Josh. It can be hard to rely on that data because they do change a lot. Tell me how significant this data is.
You know, I think Donald Trump's going to win. I do. I've been saying it the whole cycle. I have not wavered really at all. I mean, Donald Trump back in July was looking really, really good. So he had that few week stretch after the catastrophic Biden debate. There was the assassination attempt where he came within inches of losing his life on national TV, where all the world's sympathy was with him. He reached a high watermark then. Now,
there's headlines all over the place. Citizen Free Press. It's already rolled down. Mark Halperin. Many Republican strategists believe Trump has already locked up victory. I mean, this is really and truly is miraculous. The head tilt, all of it. He was left for dead. Politically, he was like the Apostle Paul. When stoned in Iconium, they drag him outside the city. He's left for, they all thought he was gone. They all thought he was dead. And he gets up, and the next day he carries on serving God. He carries on with his ministry. How many times? They've tried to kill him. They've tried to murder him. That tells you he's leading in the polls. And you know, they've got all the internal polling, the real polls, the accurate polls. We get the polls for the public consumption. They're the polls that are carefully, you know, the questions are carefully framed because they're trying to get the response they want. There's a few exceptions. But even with those, the anti-Trump ones, he is polling ahead of where he was in 2020 and 2016. That's why they're trying to kill him. This is from the New York Post. It says, for all the brio of Trump and his valiant supporters on Saturday, an uncomfortable pall hung over the rallies, talking about the return to Butler. Trump is lucky to be alive after being targeted at least twice by assassins in the past 12 weeks. How on earth did the Secret Service and the FBI get it so wrong? And then it mentions this guy, Dr. Joseph Main, who was at the rally. He was near the stage, and he was just filming the mayhem as it was unfolding and the fight, 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 and he was right up near Secret Service. It says Main 51 had a perfect view of the hit on Trump and recorded reams of video on his phone as the shots rang out. And then listen to this. But the peculiar attitude of the Secret Service and FBI agents who questioned him that night has given him grave fears for Trump's safety. Why would they have a peculiar attitude? Remember, the FBI rushed in to the scene of the crime. They had some cleanup to do. It says here, first, he says a Secret Service agent who was leading him into the witness area took a call from what he assumed was her supervisor, in which she downplayed the assassination attempt, saying only that shots were fired, there were casualties in the crowd, and the president was unharmed. That seems strange. Shots, okay, he's fine, he's okay, but he was shot. He had blood streaming down his face. Why would they downplay that? I mean, these are the ones right on the scene. You know, the ones we're supposed to praise. Leave aside FBI, leave aside the higher-ups at the Secret Service, but these are ones that, I mean, they risked their lives. They didn't do anything wrong. They did everything right. Here's this guy, he's being interviewed, he's filming everything. Why would they say something such as this? You know how you know there's a ring of truth to this guy's account? This is the New York Post writing a story that CBS would never discuss or cover. But this is the New York Post just getting one guy who was a witness, you know, interviewing him, doing actual journalism work. You know how we know that this guy's probably telling the truth? Because of what Chris Wray said just a few days later. He testified this. Clip 14.
I think with respect to former President Trump, there's some question about whether or not it's a bullet or shrapnel that, you know, that hit his ear.
Now they came out the day after this and said, yeah, it was a bullet. That's the director of the FBI, though. And you can see why he wanted to peddle that narrative to see if it would stick. It didn't. They were peddling that narrative on the ground. That's right. That's what this New York Post report reveals. Mine could hear the voice on the other end ask, the president was unharmed? So he leaned over toward the phone and said, no, he was shot with a bullet in the right ear. That's mine, this doctor who was there. He hears the phone conversation, one side of it, and he hears the agent downplaying it, and he leans in to bark at the phone saying, no, he was shot. What is wrong with these people? I think you know. It says here, the annoyed agent moved the phone to her left ear and gave me a look, he said. Next, mine was questioned by the FBI and recalls that he got into a ridiculous debate with an agent who insisted Trump had not been shot. Well, that's exactly what Chris Wray said later. What a coincidence. Yeah, I don't think he was really shot. I think it might have just been shrapnel. Yeah, it might have. The agents, they tackled him, and you know, the podium is, pretty strong. It's heavy. You bang your ear on that, and you know, you could cause a wound. Why would they be peddling this? It says here, he recalls that he got into a ridiculous debate with an agent who insisted Trump had not been shot. Yes, he was, said Maine. He turned his head and the bullet clipped the very top of his right ear. I saw some blood and tissue squirt out into the ether, it says. Ether. The agent told him, stop. President Trump wasn't hit. You don't understand that podium is armored. When the Secret Service tackled President Trump to protect him after the shots, he hit his head on the podium. They were actually trying to get some traction for this lie. Why would they do this? Very strange. Very strange behavior. Yeah, he didn't get shot. We did our job perfectly. Now, the guy did fire off 8 rounds, but look, one of them didn't get within millimeters of killing the former president of the United States of America. No, not at all. According to mine, I said, the problem is I saw it. I have a photographic memory. This is what I saw, and I have it on video. There you go. First-hand account. Maybe 60 Minutes ought to check in with this guy and then do a little investigative work. Where did the fake news that he wasn't really hit by a bullet? That did. It was out there for a couple days. It was even promoted by Christopher Wray, of all people. Well, he's an insider. He's deep state. He would never lie. He would never deceive, would he? He would never cover up the truth. Those 51 intel agents that all said Hunter Biden's laptop, all the hallmarks of Russian disinformation, they weren't lying, were they? They were just, could it be verified? Wouldn't they be able to verify whether or not it was Hunter's or Russia's? As far as I know, there were no other theories. So when Leslie says it's not Hunter's, can't be verified that it's Hunter's, what did she think? Where did it come from? Trump says, you lied. You lied. You were out there peddling the Russian disinformation hoax. You owe me an apology. He's completely right. Completely right. This is from Tom Klingenstein. Maybe it's actually Lee Smith. Anyway, it says, two attempts on the life of a former president less than 2 months apart is unprecedented in American history. According to the Trump campaign, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence recently briefed the Republican candidate on real and specific threats from Iran to assassinate him in an effort to destabilize and sow chaos in the United States. And he talks about how Iran would have good reason to do this, or motive, because of Trump taking out Soleimani and such. It says here, but above all, there's the fact that Trump ordered the January 2020 assassination of Qassem Soleimani, one-time chief of the Quds Force, the External Operations Unit of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, and second in command, etc. The Iranians have vowed to avenge the terror master's death and have threatened not only the former president, but also former Trump administration officials, including Pompeo, Iran envoy Brian Hook, and so on. It says here, the Islamic Republic definitely has it out for Trump, but it seems the most recent Iranian plot to kill the Republican candidate was hatched by, wait for it, the FBI. Yes, you can see there, it's Lee Smith. He's got a great book coming out, by the way. It's on order. We're going to try to get through that if we can and perhaps have him on the show again. Donald Trump plugged it the other day. We played that for you. It says here, last month, but it seems this most recent Iranian plot to kill the Republican candidate was hatched by the FBI. Last month, the DOJ announced it had charged a Pakistani national with ties to Iran in connection to a plot to assassinate a politician or U.S. government official on U.S. soil. According to reports, Trump was the target. The suspect, Asif Merchant, entered the country in April and was arrested on July 12 as he prepared to leave the country. It appears that Merchant was the Iranian threat the Secret Service was briefed on before the July 13 rally in Butler. It says here the FBI arranged his entry into the U.S., according to an August Twitter post from Fox correspondent Bill Malusian. The FBI invited this guy in, and then he leaves the day before July 13. And then they somehow got crooks to do the dirty work. And then they tried to peddle the lie that, well, it was just shrapnel. You would think 60 Minutes would be, I mean, aggressively looking into this, turning over every stone. Because, you know, they're there to just present the truth. Malugin's sources told him the FBI had intelligence on Merchant before he arrived in the U.S. and needed him to physically come into the country to develop the case on him and arrest him, and that if they had arrested him at customs, they would not have been able to gather evidence and information about his plot. So they let him roam, and they'll get around to arresting him later. We've got to collect evidence, though. I mean, we've got an ongoing investigation. How many times have we heard that one? It says, if the FBI had intel on Merchant's plan to kill Trump before he arrived in the United States, there's no evidence of it in the affidavit for his arrest. It was all information about his actions while in the U.S., says Friend. That doesn't mean that he hadn't done anything before then, but it confirms that they didn't have enough to arrest him when he arrived here. It says neither the affidavit nor the indictment make a strong case that Merchant is an experienced operative. The use of coded language, use of multiple cellular telephones, and removal of cellular telephones to attempt to avoid surveillance cited in the affidavit do not, contrary to the arresting agent's contention, exemplify expert tradercraft and operational security measures. It's laughable, says Friend. Like complex tradecraft is telling an accomplice to put his phone in a box. A corner drug dealer's tradecraft is more sophisticated than that. So it's a little complicated. I didn't have time to read as much of this story ahead of the show. But lots of, like the guy said in the New York Post piece, what a strange way to react to an assassination attempt. What a strange way for some Secret Service or FBI interviewers to respond the night after President Trump was shot in the ear. Further on, Lee Smith says, why would the FBI invent a plot to kill Trump? First, by claiming the Iranians are responsible for the effort, deflects attention from the fact that the real two would-be assassins, Crooks and Ruth, are Democrat Party supporters. They need the Iranian narrative, in other words. They've got to create a hoax so that the Iranian can be the fall guy, so that we know, well, it's an Iranian plot. Both Democratic Party supporters. Well, not according to Joe Scarborough. I mean, these were good Republicans that shot at Trump. Says further, says Friend, it boosts FBI statistics. If they had just been aware of some sort of plot and brought it to light, then it would have been a disruption of a domestic terrorist plot. But because they arrested him, it's dismantlement, which is a very rare and very valuable statistic. We're just out doing our job. We're saving Donald Trump's life. He was nearly murdered twice in the span of, 9 weeks? From July 13 to September 15. And yet his campaign just keeps moving along. It keeps going forward. the hand of God is so obvious. America Under Attack gives you all the background information that you need on this ongoing operation, this insurrection, this attempt to assassinate the political opposition, to blot them out, to blot out even the name of Israel, like it says over in 2 Kings 14. Let me see. We've got 4 minutes left. Maybe I can just touch on this last one from the New York Magazine. Jack Smith's October cheap shot. It says Smith has failed in his quest to try Donald Trump before the 2024 election. So instead, the special counsel has bent ordinary procedure to get in one last shot just weeks before voters go to the polls. One final attempt at lawfare. We missed with the bullet twice. Let's see if we can get him entangled in more lawfare. Take one final shot at him. Just, 30-some days before the election. That's okay. DOJ does it all the time, right? Smith has now dropped a 165-page doorstop of a filing in federal court on the issue of Trump's immunity from prosecution. It says Judge Chutkan, who suddenly claims not to care about the impending election despite her earlier efforts to expedite the case to get it in before the very same election, which got her reversed and chastised by the Supreme Court, duly complied with Smith's wishes. Whatever you want, get Trump, right? We got to take him out. I mean, he needs to be eliminated. It says here, there are two headlines here. The immediate takeaway lies in the revelations contained in Smith's oversized brief. He asked the judge for and received permission to file a brief that was 180 pages long, four times the normal maximum. I mean, there's a lot of sins that you got to expose in Trump. Says, well, that's probably enough with that. Why don't we end on, I think I got some emails here in the back. This one regarding Israel's 9/11. We played 19 minutes of that at the end of yesterday's program. And as I said yesterday, it's amazing just how soon we forget these nightmarish atrocities, just how vile and filthy the human heart is and what it's capable of doing to fellow human beings. It says, wow, seeing Israel's 9/11 again was even harder to watch now than it was the first time. A horror that is unimaginable. Seeing what those murderous thugs so casually carried out on innocent people, they truly are monsters. And it's so hard to understand how Americans can support those terrorists. It really causes us to see the reality of what is coming to our nation and why it's coming. How frightening to contemplate. It says every one of them should have to view this over and over again until they weep. How desperate this world needs, or desperately this world needs, the return of Christ and the setting up of God's government, the only hope for mankind. Well, many of us are going to be leaving for the Feast of Tabernacles in just a few days' time to celebrate God's kingdom, the wonderful world of tomorrow, the establishment of God's government on this earth, the rule and reign of Jesus Christ as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. When these kinds of 9/11s will be a thing of the past. Think of those prophecies where even the military armaments, they're turned into farming equipment as God enforces his way of love. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you again tomorrow.